Asif with From the Margins. I'm talking with a teacher in the public school system here in Nova Scotia. And we're talking about these recent threatened cuts, humongous cuts in education in Nova Scotia. Humongous numbers have been thrown around of up to 2,000 teachers potentially being cut, as well as up to even 4,000 overall workers, 70 schools being closed. Is all part of a trimming down budgets in Nova Scotia. So why don't we just get started? How long have you known that something was up, that there's the threat and cuts coming up?
There were some rumbles just in the last couple months, really. Things have started to, I heard this 22% figure being thrown around a little bit, but no one seemed to react much until just about a week ago. Started hearing more kind of chatter in the staff room about it. I think it the media picked up on it a little bit more, yeah.
And you're mentioning, like, in the staff room, so people were talking about something going on, like...
Yeah, like I say, the media seems to have picked up on it in the last week or two, and I'm not sure if there was an official announcement made or something. But, yeah, people are talking quite a bit. People are trying to figure out what that means, and there's a lot of talk, and it's hard to separate what is, you know, staff room chatter with what is actually going to happen. You have experienced teachers who've been there for 20, 25, 30 years who maybe have a better idea. Then again, I don't know if even they have seen threats of this magnitude. You know, 22% is, that's more than a fifth of the school's budget, so.
Yeah, that was interesting. So even people who've been in there for a really long time are seeing that this is largely unprecedented. Like something that
I've never heard of anything like that. So, like, I've been pretty politically engaged for most of my life, and you know, over the past 15 years at least, I've never seen any talk like that. And of course, it goes with the fact that, you know, this is of course an unprecedented recession, and things like this, things haven't been this bad economically for so long. So. I do think it's kind of pretty out of the ordinary.
So, in what I've been reading, what's being said in the media is that sounds like mostly rural schools are going to be affected, like, with all those threatened closures. So, in a situation in like an urban area, are people like thinking that they'll probably be largely off the hook, or people feeling this? Awesome?
No, I don't think so. I think people do feel quite threatened. I mean, the big justification given for it, which, you know, might have some legitimacy, is that enrollment is down, that Nova Scotia doesn't have the same number of students and therefore doesn't need the same budget and the same amount of teachers to do it. And I know that our school, for example, enrollment has been down steadily over the last 5 years or so. So definitely urban schools are going to be feeling the crunch as well. I mean, they're talking a lot about... All these formulas are really complicated, and there's a lot of things to consider. One is that this 22%, all indications I have is that that's basically saber rattling. Like, they're not actually going to cut 22%. Now, part of it's strategic. They throw out the figure 22% so that when they eventually cut 15%, people think it doesn't seem so bad. But at the same time, I mean, well, where do those cuts happen? Like, how can quote-unquote inefficiencies be rendered more efficient? And I think a lot of people who work within the school system would agree with you that there are inefficiencies. You know, I kind of hate to use such a corporatist kind of word, but there's waste, and of course what is considered waste is very subjective, but teachers don't want to feel the brunt of it, and teachers know, and parents know, that teachers are overworked, and it's been getting worse. Like, this is the workload is definitely the number one issue among teachers right now in terms of where their problems are. If you look at something like class sizes, for example, like, they might talk about class sizes, you know, well, our class size is going to increase. Is the average class size going to increase? The number of average class size is fairly meaningless. And to illustrate that, I had a class last year of 5 students, just because it was a particular program that those students were taking, an elective class those students were taking. And I mean, that's great. 5 students to one teacher. It was a dream, right? This year I have a class, again, really nice kids, but there are 36 of them. So the average, you average that out. It doesn't matter that my average class size between those two is 20.5. I mean, those numbers going up or down doesn't really mean a lot. What I think makes a difference to teachers and again to students or indirectly then to students and to parents is that teachers have a reasonable workload. So I think obviously some teachers are concerned about their jobs as well. But if their jobs are there and the workload is reasonable, I think, and as long as some cutting can be done intelligently, I think teachers would even agree that there is some places to cut.
You mentioned the whole workload issue. So, I guess the way it comes across in my mind is that, well, if the workload is to be more balanced, if there's just all this work to do, then doesn't there need to be more teachers? And then each teacher has a reasonable workload, the students get a better education.
Yeah, again, the equation for that isn't quite so simple either. The reason workload has gone up has not so much to do with just a plain number of students equation. It has to do with what teachers are expected to do that they weren't to do in the past. When you think of a teacher, you think of someone in front of a classroom who lectures, who prepares good learning activities, and who marks papers, and that's what your teacher is. Nowadays, there is a lot of talk of what they call differentiated learning, meaning you take into account students' special needs, which is great. Except in practice, what it means is I might have a class where I have 30 students, maybe six or seven of those students are what they call individualized program plans or IPPs. So for every assignment that I give those kids, every test that I give those kids, I potentially have to make up to six different versions of that. That's just one example. Aside from that, you have things like, for example, the school improvement plan, where everyone's expected to sort of come up with your personal growth plan and goals and objectives and steps for meeting it. A lot of paperwork, a lot of bureaucracy that we're expected to do that teachers just weren't expected to do it in the past. Communicating results and learning to parents. Again, very worthy. Very valuable things. Parents should be able to communicate with teachers about what's going on in their classroom, but we're expected to do this on top of everything that we've already been doing. So I'm answering emails from parents at home at 10 o'clock at night. And what's the solution? I'm not quite sure. I mean, definitely increasing teacher workload, like let's say if they to save money, they'll cut down on teacher preparation time, I think would be a completely unreasonable step because we. As it is, I mean, I already work, and most teachers, 90% of teachers, I would say, work at home, work into the evenings, work on weekends, which, is part and parcel of the job. But if they cut that time, if they cut that preparation time, which is one of the rumors that's going around, that could be something that teachers would get upset about.
So essentially what they could do, like theoretically, is just say, oh, teachers, now you're working less hours, so you're going to take those hours out of your preparation time, and that would be essentially be a reduction to pay,
I think
which could
so.
be.
Yeah. A teacher was telling me, an older teacher who's been in the system for a while and who worked for a while in Alberta. Here in Nova Scotia, we get I te I'm a high school teacher, so I teach 3 periods out of 4 in a day, and the fourth period is my prep. Once or twice a week, I have to use my prep period on hall duty or something like that. And then there's 2 semesters, so essentially over the year, I'm teaching 6 out of 8 periods. In Alberta, where this other teacher was telling me he taught before, teachers were expected to teach 7 out of 8. So that's an extra course, and that means during one whole semester, you don't have any time in the day to do your photocopying, do your marking, contact your parents, anything like that. That kind of step really kind of makes me shiver and makes me wonder whether I'd want to do this job anymore.
Because that's essentially meaning you just don't have time to move at all.
Yeah, I mean it's impossible. Like you need that time, and you need more than that time if you want to get any marking done. If you want to actually prepare meaningful lessons and activities for students, you need a little bit of preparation time. It's only reasonable to be able to do it. And as it is, we already have to take time out of that to do perform duties, to do a lot of this extra work I'm talking about. Call parents, when Johnny or Susie isn't scoring high enough or is falling behind. again, all reasonable things that teachers should do as long as we have time in which to do them.
And I find this pretty interesting, where you mentioned that there's something called being able to actually do the job effectively, which really does matter. Like, there's this, you know, people are trying to teach, and that means something. And if you actually have hours theoretically being cut, it's quite likely teachers will actually still end up doing the same amount of work, but they'll get paid less for it.
Oh yeah, I mean, teachers are very dedicated people, and any parent knows that. So many parents that I know have come to me at parent-teacher meetings and thanked me and thank other teachers, and kids will rave about other teachers that they have and about something that particularly touched them. And teachers do all sorts of extracurricular activities. I mean, the list going on. People don't become teachers because they want the money or even because they want the 2 months vacation. People become teachers because they really want to work with kids and they want to have that meaningful interaction with them. And by and large, teachers are some of the most dedicated people I've ever met.
So just imagining what might play out. I mean, these are all hypotheticals. So there could be like the risk of the quality actually going down because, well, what's going to happen if essentially teachers' pay is being cut? A lot of them will probably think, well, I'm going to do less work now. But there's going to be a struggle, it sounds like, between that idea of, oh, well, I'm going to do less, and the desire to actually finish the job, so to speak.
It could happen. You know, this is all hypothetical. Mm-hmm. We don't want to get too wrapped up in that now, I think. I mean, let's wait and see what the government is actually asking the school boards to cut and how the school boards react. But one thing a friend of mine was mentioning to me the other day, who works with labor, is that he pointed out to me, and it's I kind of knew this before, but it's good to be reminded of the fact that teachers have a lot of power in society in terms of being an essential service. And that's not only in terms of the job we do, but it's also in terms of the extras that we do, the extracurricular activities. Now, the last thing I would want to do is go on strike. The last thing I would want to do is cut out any of the extracurricular activities that I supervise and assist with my students. But I mean, if it's a matter of reducing the quality of the job that I'm able to do, which I already feel suffers because of the workload that I have, if I feel that it's to the point where I would have to take some sort of job action, I would consider doing so. It's thankfully not a situation I've had to face in the past, but if it comes to that, I would have to really think hard about it.
It seems like that's a question probably a lot of teachers are actually thinking about now when talking about numbers that big. Maybe just going back a little to some of the other possible areas in which cuts might be made. You mentioned one, like taken out of the preparation time. Are there other particular services or other areas that look like they're possibly in the chopping block?
Yeah, there's some special programs that have been really positive at the high school level, which is what I know, that have been there in the last several years. One is the International Baccalaureate Program, which is a high quality, high expectations program mostly for very academically advanced students. Great curriculum. In terms of efficiency, I would have to say, that's the programs where you have five students to a teacher kind of thing, because so few students are going through that advanced program. That's the kind of thing I could see the government stepping up and saying, well, this isn't a good use of our resources. Which would be a shame. At the same time, it would be an easily justifiable thing for them to cut, I could see. Sort of on the, I don't want to say the other end of the spectrum, but for another group of students, you have programs like the Options and Opportunities, or O2 program, which kind of is a gateway into trades for students who are considering careers in the trades. Yeah, those are sort of the sort of special programs I'm seeing that look most vulnerable to me. EPAs, or educational program assistants, the people who work with really small ratios with students with high needs, students with intellectual disabilities or physical disabilities, and who have an adult who helps them get through their school day. I could see those people being on the chopping block. Of course, this is all purely my own personal speculation coming from a place where I don't have that much experience, but if I had to look at the areas where the school board would try to make some tough decisions, those are the people that I would see.
And even in the media reports, there's fears over loss of services for autistic children and as well for special needs.
Yeah, I heard about that. I really can't say I know much about it. I'd be hesitant to comment on it, but yeah, it could happen. You never know. Autism is an interesting thing. There's a spectrum of autism, and some autistic students are much more high functioning than others. So you could see a potential argument for, well, does this student really need these special programs, or can that this student integrate with the rest of the mainstream?
But it almost sounds like what could end up happening is like more streamlining of just a lot of the programs that being created to look at different special needs or just a more advanced learning, so to speak, are looking at as being, well, maybe we don't need that. Maybe we'll just like push everyone through in this like more of a generic kind of an
Yeah,
education.
again, this is all just my speculation, but yeah, like that's what I would see if I was in their position.
Does that and that sounds like it's a bit of an a change in the environment, like just even like the culture of the learning environment, where I'm sure that a lot of these programs came from people actually fighting for them, for the
Absolutely.
services and all
No,
that.
you're right.
So
Yeah, I mean, government uses the excuse of hard financial times to do a lot of things, and the media just echoes it all the time. So it's hard to, it's a time where it seems that although people would be outraged, government could almost get away from it. Look at Ontario under Mike Harris, and look at when times were not as tough as they say they are now. And yeah, I could see that happening, unfortunately.
So, looking at the time right now, I mean we're just a few days fresh from the numbers coming out, basically, of up to 4,000 workers and 2,000 teachers, and again, all hypothetical for now. But is there any kind of expectation of when an actual decision might be made on? I hear the cuts are looked at whenever they happen would be over 3 years. But is there any idea of when people might see the first round of cuts?
Well, perhaps for the next school year. I mean, I really don't know. I can't say I've been following that too much. The Nova Scotia Teachers Union runs on a very organized hierarchical seniority system, and those teachers who would have the least seniority are definitely the ones who are most worried about being on the chopping block. And typically something like that would happen in between school years. So if this would be for the next budget year, I can only see it happening for next September.
Now, I'm wondering about like if this whole like this kind of this it's clearly people's feeling are feeling their jobs are more at risk or could be drastically changed. Does it seem like now a lot more teachers are kind of talking to each other about this and like maybe like really like looking at like, well, maybe we should get a little tighter and form a stronger bond with each other. Is any of that going on?
It's getting there. Teachers are already a pretty collegial bunch, and teachers talk all the time about lots of things. Teachers gossip; they're only human. Teachers, whether there's any talk of collective action at this point, no. I mean, I think, like I said before, this is a lot of saber rattling. I think there's a lot of well, wait and see. What can we do now anyway? Let's sort of wait and see what the actual numbers are. What the school board is actually going to present to teachers as a proposal before the union is going to get its position together, before teachers are really going to organize. I'd say it's too early in the game to really know. But teachers are definitely aware. People are talking about it. People are afraid. I remember it was the year 2000, I believe, when there was another round of cuts here in Nova Scotia in the education system. And at that time, we did see some teachers getting cut. I wish I could remember a little bit more about that. Maybe you want to do some a little bit of digging for your show, but But at that time, yeah, it seemed like teachers were there to stick together, and students, that's what's kind of most heartening, is that students are there to stick together for their teachers. I mean, some teachers, regardless of whether they've been teaching in the same school board for 3 or 30 years, some of those young teachers are really, really dedicated and really have the students on side and really have kind of captured the hearts of the students in a way. And students will fight for their teachers if they can, in whatever way they can too. So.
Yeah, I mean, out of this situation, what is a tough situation? There's a possibility of like really strong alliances forming. Like, it's hard to say exactly what will happen, but there's a lot of times people can really come together and stick together to try and basically protect each other.
It's true, yeah. And you know, this affects so many people, teachers, students, and parents, and who are all concerned about the quality of education. And really, like, I'm optimistic that would happen in this case.
Yeah, parents too. That's a good point. Like, parents are looking at this as their issue as well. Oh, some comments. I guess just shifting the channels a little, we did talk a bit about education quality, and you know, you mentioned at one point, like, you had this more of an ideal situation of like, hey, you only had 5 students in this one case, it was like your dream. Mm-hmm. So it kind of got me thinking, like, what would you see as like a more of an ideal setup, like, you as a teacher, what is the ideal educational environment for you?
That's a big question. Well, our system is not, it's not totally broken, but in my opinion, it's kind of barely holding together. I mean, from, we're pretty used to this factory style education, and, despite the fact, like I say, there's a lot of really great teachers out there, a lot of really dedicated teachers. In fact, the vast, vast majority of teachers are and really want to give the best for their students, and students appreciate their teachers. Fundamentally, kids don't like school. And, you know, if I could be in an environment where kids really enjoyed and really wanted to come learn every day, there are many ways in that which that could happen. If students had different choices on how they choose to make their schooling and whether they go to school. I mean, we have compulsory attendance. We have this big story came out about skipping, about the government pilot program to expel students who missed 20% of their classes. Why do we need to look at that? Why are students skipping 20% of their classes? And why, you know, can we not devise some sort of system where if that happens, then students are more responsible for their own learning in a way that matters to them a little bit more? There's so many things that are wrong with it. Fundamentally, the fact that these kids are just sort of forced to be in this place every day, clearly, again, you know, some kids, that just really isn't for them, and that's okay. And I wish we could just accept that as a society. We could figure out how to make something that's a little bit more suited to what kids need at that age. Because what they don't need is to sit in a class for 6 hours a day for 12 years.
Yeah. There's like more fundamental like questions, like,
absolutely.
I remember hearing this report recently on a CBC show. It was from some place in the States, a place in which a judge had ordered ankle bracelets on students skipping school.
Wow.
Which is really shocking, you know, like,
what have we come to? I mean, what? You know, students. Yeah, students. I try to dig a little bit deeper sometimes with students, and I say, what do you like school? What do you like about it? What classes do you like? And or for example, because it's hard to engage students. It's really hard to get students to think outside that box because they've been told that this is a key to their future. That they, some of them don't believe it. Some of them skip school anyway. They just don't care. Some of them come. Most of them come reluctantly and go through the motions because they're told that this is what they have to do in order to have success in life, whatever that means. But, you know, when I try to engage them in that, whether it's sort of like through a written evaluation, how do you like this class? What do you like? What do you dislike? What helps you learn well in this class? You don't get very creative answers. You gotta get, no, I don't really like it, but I recognize that I need it for my education. Or, you know, we get students who say, I like the class, but fundamentally they don't like being told what they have to do when, having to ask permission to go to the bathroom, being punished for, you know, arriving late and skipping school when, you know, a more rational thing would be to say, well, you skipped, this is the work that you missed, make it up for me, and that's fine. It's all very absolutist, and I'm not sure we're really at, I wouldn't say we're at a critical point where society is realizing that. In fact, I wouldn't say we're there at all. That's a pretty out there kind of perception, but I somehow wish that we could make it more so.
It's too bad that's not what's being fought for right
Oh
now.
God,
You know what I
yeah.
mean?
We're and this is the thing with the left in general, is that whether it's in education or whatever, we're so caught up in fighting for the meager, broken welfare state that we have, the sort of meager concessions that have been there, because it's constantly under attack, that we're constantly fighting for the status quo. We don't even, like, against these 22% cuts, we don't have any time or energy to fight for something that would actually be worthwhile. Anyway,
No.
maybe my language is a bit strong, even for me, so, but
Yeah.
generally, that's, yeah.
No, I appreciate that sort of kind of like what your actual vision is of like what education even means, rather than
Sure.
what you're teaching, right? So
People might say, you know, well, why are you working in this
yeah.
system? And I say I work in this system because I love kids and I like to work with kids. And at some point, you can work at all the community centers you want. You can volunteer, and kids are in school. 90% of kids are in school all day. And if you want access to those kids, if you want to be able to work with those kids and develop relationships with them, then work in a school.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, unfortunately. I would love to work in, you know, there's some alternative schools that are very interesting, but those kids are going to be fine for the general. Generally, those kids are going to turn out okay. They're going to have positive experiences with their schooling, whether or not I'm there. So, I'm going to choose to work in the public system and just, yeah, get whatever's thrown at me.
Yeah. Well, do you have any final thoughts?
I mean, no, I appreciate the time for to be able to chat about this. And I mean, I guess I emphasize all this is just my personal thoughts. It's not the official position of the union. It's not the official position of anyone except me. I'm sometimes too optimistic. I like to think that we're going to come out of this okay, and be able to fight for those more valuable things, those improvements in education. As broken as the public system is, in my opinion, it's also true that lots of people recognize it that are in the system. Lots of teachers know that this isn't the best way to do things, that some of this is ridiculous. They don't necessarily have the energy to fight for it to be changed, but they know something's up. They know that this system that we put our kids through is not necessarily the best way to do things. And that's what gives me hope, is that these teachers are really people who want to make life better for all these kids. So hopefully we can keep doing that.